Good afternoon, and welcome to the Green Thumb Show. I'm Lee Murray, your reader for Sun South of Arizona. Thanks for joining us. From today's Arizona Republic, National Garden Bureau's Plants of the Year by Roseanne Loparco. Each year, the National Garden Bureau, a nonprofit organization with a mission to motivate and inspire gardeners, selects their Plants of the Year. Here are the winners for 2026. Year of the Ficus. Ficuses are quite common houseplants. The edible fig is also part of the ficus family. The key to growing healthy indoor ficuses is to give plants as much light as possible. You may have to use supplemental lighting to ensure plants grow well. Year of the Crocus. The Bureau's bulb choice is one of the first flowers to bloom in the spring, and some varieties will bloom in fall. Known for vibrant, cup-shaped blooms, crocuses are great choices for rock gardens or even the lawn. They need well-drained soil and full to part sun. Year of the Impatiens. These plants bring beautiful displays to window boxes, containers, and garden spaces. The three basic types of Impatiens include traditional varieties, New Guinea, and Sun Patiens. Where you place the plants depends on the variety. Traditional prefer full shade, New Guinea prefer part sun, and Sun Patiens can tolerate full sun. All varieties need well-drained soil with compost added. Year of the Azalea. These shrubs are popular choices for foundation landscapes. They are loved for their spring blooms, and some varieties are available that rebloom. Azaleas prefer part shade and need good drainage. Add a layer of mulch over the root zone to help retain moisture and protect roots against temperature extremes. Year of the Sedum. This perennial can thrive in the most challenging environment. Whether you're looking for compact, clumping, tall, or ground cover, there is a sedum for everyone. Plants prefer dry, well-drained soils and will handle poor, rocky, and nutrient-deficient soils. Year of the Hot Pepper. Hot peppers are in the genus Capsicum. They can require a bit of a green thumb, but the rewards are worth the effort. Grow them from seeds or as transplants in early spring. Keep evenly moist and add fertilizer, as these plants are heavy feeders. They also are very cold sensitive. Peppers are self-pollinated and should set fruit without intervention. Use gloves to handle and process hot peppers. Learn more about these plants as well as past year winners recommended by the NGB by visiting ngb.org. From the February-March issue of Phoenix Home and Garden magazine, where the kitchen meets the garden. A desert potager rooted in old-world elegance and abundance. From the kitchen window of this Paradise Valley home, an intentionally designed potager garden is always in view. More than a typical collection of raised beds, a potager blends food, flowers, and daily living into a cohesive whole. When I describe a potager to others, I tell them it is a French-inspired kitchen garden where everything is designed to be both functional and beautiful, says homeowner and garden designer Myla Greiner. The pathways, the raised beds, the seasonal planting, the proximity to the kitchen, all of it works together to support daily living. You step outside for herbs, greens, flowers for the table, or whatever is ready that day. Purchased in February 2025, the property immediately offered what Myla's family had been searching for: privacy, breathing room, and potential. The one-acre lot was the first thing that drew us in, she explains. We love the feeling of space and the ability to create something personal and lived in. She immediately began shaping both house and landscape at the same time, envisioning the outdoor space as a true extension of the home. The yard itself was a blank canvas. No trees, no beds, no garden to speak of, save a lone citrus tree near the current potager and a few mature ones at the back of the lot. Even the pool and hardscape were redesigned simultaneously with the landscape, allowing everything to be created as one cohesive vision. Central to that vision was the long-held dream of being able to look out from the kitchen and see the garden. Myla's gardening roots stretch far beyond Arizona. Raised in Missouri with a large family garden, she grew up with rich soil and clear seasonal cues. California followed, where mild conditions made growing nearly effortless. After moving to Arizona 5 years ago, gardening required a complete shift in mindset. The heat, the soil, the timing, everything required a new understanding, she recalls. Through study, experimentation, and ultimately becoming a master gardener, She learned to work with the desert. Today, her approach centers on soil building, close spacing, shade management, and respecting true desert seasons. Once you understand how the desert works with you rather than against you, gardening here becomes incredibly rewarding, she says. Designing the garden herself felt natural. It is, after all, her profession. From the beginning, the goal was clear, a food-forward landscape inspired by European kitchen gardens. Raised beds anchor the space with trellises, herbs, edible flowers, and seasonal crops layered in to create abundance and beauty side by side. I wanted the garden to feel both beautiful and abundant, a place that connects our family to the seasons and invites everyone outside, she says. The raised beds themselves make a strong statement. Built from limestone, they bring a sense of permanence and old-world elegance to the potager. The stone complements the home while providing deep, healthy soil and a visual structure that grounds the entire garden. Every area of the landscape has a purpose. The raised beds sit close to the kitchen, making it effortless to step outside for herbs or greens. A covered patio opens directly onto the garden and serves as a daily gathering place. Coffee in the morning, friends in the evening. The goal has always been to create a place that feels lived in, she says, where the garden supports our daily life. Myla's favorite plants change with the seasons, whether tomatoes, lettuce, okra, citrus, berries, herbs, or edible flowers, but they all share one thing in common. They're grown to be used. The family consumes a large portion of what the garden produces, weaving harvests into everyday meals and gatherings. She keeps it simple by limiting the plant palette to about 6 types, so the garden feels cohesive and manageable. When you work with fewer plant varieties, you become more connected to the rhythm and needs of each one, she notes. Looking ahead, the next chapter of Myla's landscape plan includes a rose garden, a citrus orchard, grapevines, and strawberry patches, each designed with the same intention and care. A garden is a living space and evolves as you do, she says. In this desert potager, that evolution is not only visible, but also deeply felt, rooted in family, seasonality, and the simple act of stepping outside to harvest food grown with purpose. Now here are Myla's growing tips. First, build your soil before you plant. Healthy soil is the foundation of a productive garden and matters more than any single plant choice. 2, plant what you want to eat and in the amount you will use. Succession planting allows you to enjoy a steady harvest rather than everything ripening at once. 3, keep your plant palette simple and intentional. Fewer varieties create consistency in the garden and make it easier to learn how to care for each plant well. 4, plant seasonally and work with the climate. Gardens thrive when you follow nature's timing rather than forcing growth. 5, plant closely to create natural shade. Dense planting helps protect the soil and conserve moisture and supports healthier plants in warm climates. 6, border your garden with herbs and edible flowers. This not only maximizes growing space, but also creates a more European-inspired garden style. 7, design the garden to be part of your daily life. Placing beds near the kitchen make harvesting feel natural and effortless. 8, water deeply and intentionally. Thoughtful watering encourages strong root systems and more resilient plants. 9, spend a few minutes in the garden each day. Regular observation helps you catch issues early and stay connected to what is growing. 10, remember that the garden is never finished. It evolves with the seasons and with you, and that ongoing care is part of the joy. Also from the February-March issue of Phoenix Home and Garden Magazine, Garden Solutions, Citrus Season in the Desert, and there's a letter from Noel, AZ Plant Lady. Hello, friends. Late winter in the desert is a season of quiet beauty and the anticipation of spring. Cool morning temperatures and pleasantly warm afternoons create the perfect opportunity to spend time outdoors. Citrus trees are laden with ripening fruit and offer bright pops of color against lush green leaves. Hummingbirds fly from bloom to bloom in search of nectar, and the first signs of spring emerge with new buds and fresh growth. I invite you to step outside to enjoy the cool, mild weather and do the few necessary maintenance tasks before spring's rapid burst of growth arrives. In this issue, I will share tips to help you make the most of this transitional season. You will learn how to select plants that attract hummingbirds during the cooler months when blooms are few, providing welcome color when many plants are resting. I will also cover which trees, shrubs, and ground covers can still be planted successfully in winter, and which frost-tender favorites should wait for warmer temperatures. Citrus care is a major focus this month. I will walk you through the essential steps of fertilizing your trees, determining when fruit is truly ready to pick, and recognizing the signs of roof rats, which can be problematic in our area. A few simple practices can protect your harvest and keep your citrus thriving for years to come. I encourage you to take advantage of these gentle winter days. Let the slower rhythm of this time of year inspire you to appreciate the beauty around your home without feeling rushed by numerous garden tasks. And that letter to the readers from Noel, AZ Plant Lady. One of the greatest joys of living in the low to mid-altitude desert regions is stepping outside on a winter morning and picking a fresh orange, lemon, or grapefruit from your own tree. For many people who come from colder climates, the idea of growing citrus feels extra special, something they cannot do back home. Our mild winters and long, warm growing season create ideal conditions for citrus to thrive, and with a bit of care, your trees will reward you with flavorful fruit year after year. As we approach late winter and early spring, it's time to focus on several tasks that will set your citrus up for success. Fertilizing, checking for fruit ripeness, washing for pests, and knowing when not to prune are all essential for maintaining healthy, productive trees. Citrus are heavy feeders, and they rely on regular fertilization to support growth, maintain dark green foliage, and produce abundant fruit. In the desert southwest, the recommended schedule is easy to remember because it aligns with familiar holidays: Valentine's Day, Memorial Day, and Labor Day. These three applications provide the consistent nutrition citrus need throughout their active growing season. Fertilizing on or around these dates ensures nutrients are available when the tree needs them most: new leaf growth in spring, early fruit development, and late summer growth. While both synthetic and organic fertilizers are available, I recommend using organic citrus fertilizers whenever possible. They release nutrients slowly, improve soil health, and reduce the risk of salt buildup. Look for a fertilizer formulated specifically for citrus. The label should list the major nutrients: nitrogen N, phosphorus P, and potassium K, all of which supports vigorous growth and fruit production. Citrus also requires certain micronutrients, particularly iron, zinc, and manganese, which keep the foliage green and prevent deficiencies that often occur in our alkaline soils. When fertilizing citrus, a common mistake is applying it too close to the trunk. Citrus roots grow outward, extending well beyond the canopy edge. To fertilize effectively, calculate the correct amount based on the size or age of your tree, and this information is found on the fertilizer label. Sprinkle the fertilizer evenly in a wide circle, beginning several feet out from the trunk and extending past the outer branches of the tree. Lightly rake the granules into the top layer of soil to help them break down. Water deeply after applying. Fertilizer needs moisture to move down to the roots. If your citrus tree is surrounded by landscape rock, it can trap heat and contribute to summer stress. Rake the rock back to the outer edge of the canopy and replace the area beneath the tree with 3 inches of compost or an organic mulch like bark chips. This helps create a cooler microclimate during hot weather while enriching the soil as it breaks down. Be sure to keep mulch a few inches away from the tree to avoid moisture-related fungal or insect issues. Citrus ripens slowly on the tree, and color alone is not always a reliable indicator of when it is ready. The best test is simple: pick one and taste it. If it's sweet or tart, in the case of lemons, and juicy, it's ready. Do not be in a hurry to harvest, as the fruit can remain on the tree for weeks after it's ready. Once picked, citrus does not continue to ripen, so it's okay to leave fruit in place until you're ready to enjoy it. Here's a general guide for ripening times in the Phoenix area. Lemons and limes, late fall through spring. Navel oranges, December through February. Grapefruit, January through April. Valencia oranges, March through June. If your fruit seems sour or bland, it often just needs more time on the tree. Unfortunately, our citrus trees have become a welcome food source for roof rats. These pests are active primarily at night and often go undetected until half-eaten fruit begins to appear. They are particularly problematic with trees located near the eaves of your house, allowing them easy access. To discourage these pests, harvest ripe fruit promptly, especially if you notice gnaw marks. Keep trees pruned away from roofs, fences, and even block walls. Remove fallen fruit immediately. Seal openings around the home where rats might enter. To get rid of roof rats, snap traps may be necessary. Avoid poison baits in residential gardens. These can harm pets and wildlife. Consult with your local pest control professional to assist you. While a warm, late winter day may inspire you to grab your pruners, citrus trees should be left alone until all danger of frost has passed. Pruning too early exposes tender new growth to cold damage. It's safe to wait until mid-March before pruning, limiting pruning to removing dead, crossing, or damaged branches. Major shaping should be avoided. Citrus prefers a full, rounded canopy that shades its bark. Now, here are some letters that were sent in from readers. I'm fascinated by a succulent in my neighbor's garden. It has a unique, bushy shape with spiky stems that are green at the base and orange-red at the tips. I'd love to add one to my own landscape. Can you help me identify it? Here's the answer. The succulent you're describing is commonly known as fire sticks. This striking plant shows its best orange-red color when grown in full sun, while shaded areas cause the foliage to fade to green. Fire sticks can grow quite tall, often reaching 6 feet or more. So be sure to give it plenty of room, though it can be pruned to maintain a smaller size, if needed. Because its sap is toxic if ingested and can irritate skin and eyes, it's best planted away from children, pets, and areas with heavy foot traffic, such as a front yard. It also thrives in large containers, making it a versatile choice for sun-filled patios. Here's another letter. I am a snowbird who lives here from fall through early spring and would like to attract hummingbirds to my garden. However, most of my plants bloom in summer when I'm not here. What can I plant that will ensure my yard is filled with these welcome visitors? And here's the answer. We're fortunate that hummingbirds live in the desert year-round, but nectar-rich blooms can be scarce during the cooler months. To attract these colorful visitors while you're here in fall through spring, focus on species that flower during this time frame. Tuberosa is my top choice, producing red tubular blooms that hummingbirds can't resist. Pink Fairy Duster offers soft powder puff flowers in winter and early spring. Firecracker Penstemon adds vibrant spikes of red blooms, and Bluebells Emu Bush provides lavender flowers through the cool season. Each of these plants does best in full sun and will brighten your landscape and keep hummingbirds visiting your garden while you're here to enjoy them. And here's the final question. I've always heard that planting in the fall is best because it gives new plants time to settle in before our summer heat hits. But I missed that window this year. Can I still plant in winter, or are there certain plants I should hold off on until later? And here's the answer. You're correct that fall is the ideal planting season. It gives new plants time to establish before summer's extreme heat. But if you miss that opportunity, don't worry. Winter is still a good time to add many plants to your landscape. Focus on native and desert-adapted trees, shrubs, vines, and ground covers which handle our winter cold well and will begin rooting before warmer weather arrives. Avoid planting frost-tender plants such as bougainvillea, lantana, and yellow bells. These are easily damaged by freezing temperatures, so it's best to wait until the danger of frost has passed before putting them into the ground. Now, here are some monthly garden tasks for this time of year, February through March. For low to mid elevations, prune roses back by the end of February. The Arizona Federation of Garden Clubs has a helpful pruning guide at azgardenclubs.com/pruning-roses. Be sure to clean up fallen leaves and other debris around the base to reduce disease and insect problems. Avoid using landscape rock near roses as it overheats the soil. Instead, apply compost or bark mulch after pruning and refresh it each winter. Late winter is also an ideal time to plant bare root roses, but they should be in the ground by the end of February. Continue planting cool season crops by using transplants for leaf lettuces and green onions, or sowing seeds for radishes and other fast growers. Fertilize both edible crops and flowering annuals to support strong growth. This is also a good time to start warm season vegetable seeds indoors, such as cucumbers, peppers, and tomatoes. As seedlings grow and the danger of frost passes, gradually expose them to outdoor sunlight and temperatures over several days before planting them in the garden. Late winter is the best time to prune deciduous trees because their bare branches reveal the tree's natural structure. Remove dead, damaged, or crossing branches to encourage healthy growth and improve airflow throughout the canopy. Avoid cutting large limbs unless necessary, as doing so can stress the tree. Steer clear of untrained landscapers. Improper pruning can cause lasting damage. Instead, hire a certified arborist or learn proper techniques yourself using resources such as extension.arizona.edu. For high elevations, prune deciduous trees, shrubs, and summer-blooming perennials while they're still dormant to encourage healthy growth. Water trees, shrubs, and perennials as needed when conditions are dry, especially in sunny exposed locations. As soon as the soil thaws, begin preparing beds by loosening soil, incorporating compost, and amending with organic matter to support healthy spring growth. And those of you who are regular listeners to this show know we feature stories each week from the terrific book, Chicken Soup for the Gardener's Soul. We actually have two stories today. The first one is by Irma Bombeck. It's called Mike in the Grass. And there's a quote here from Albert Hubbard, "The love we give away is the only love we keep." When Mike was 3, he wanted a sandbox, and his father said, "There goes the yard. We'll have kids over here day and night, and they'll throw sand into the flower beds, and cats will make a mess in it, and it'll kill the grass for sure." And Mike's mother said, "It'll come back." When Mike was 5, he wanted a jungle gym set with swings that would take his breath away and bars to take him to the summit, and his father said, "Good grief, I've seen those things in backyards, and do you know what they look like? Mud holes in a pasture. Kids digging their gym shoes in the ground. It'll kill the grass." And Mike's mother said, "It'll come back." Between breaths, when Daddy was blowing up the plastic swimming pool, he warned, "You know what they're going to do to this place? They're going to condemn it and use it for a missile site. I hope you know what you're doing. They'll track water everywhere and have a million water fights, and you won't be able to take out the garbage without stepping in mud up to your neck. When we take this down, we'll have the only brown lawn on the block." "It'll come back," Mike's mother said. When Mike was 12, he volunteered his yard for a campout. As he hoisted the tents and drove in the spikes, his father stood at the window and observed, "Why don't I just put the grass seed out in cereal bowls for the birds and save myself the trouble of spreading it around? You know for a fact that those tents and all those big feet are going to trample down every single blade of grass, don't you? Don't bother to answer. I know what you're going to say. It'll come back." The basketball hoop on the side of the garage attracted more crowds than the Olympics, and a small patch of lawn that started out with a barren spot the size of a garbage can lid soon grew to encompass the entire side yard. Just when it looked as if the new seed might take root, the winter came and the sled runners beat it into ridges. Mike's father shook his head and said, "I never asked for much in this life, only a patch of grass." And his wife smiled and said, "It'll come back." The lawn this fall was beautiful. It was green and alive and rolled out like a sponge carpet along the drive where gym shoes had trod, along the garage where bicycles used to fall, and around the flower beds where little boys used to dig with ice teaspoons. But Mike's father never saw it. He anxiously looked beyond the yard and asked with a catch in his voice, "He will come back, won't he?" That was called Mike in the Grass, written by Irma Bombeck. And the other story today is called Robbie's Mission. It was written by George M. Flynn. And there's a quote here from Eve Merriam. "I dream of giving birth to a child who will ask, 'Mother, what was war?'" Robbie's Mission. Every April, my school's 8th grade class travels to Washington, D.C. for their class trip. It's a long ride from New Jersey, but it's always exciting to get to visit places so important in our history. One year back in the mid-80s, history really came alive for my students. That was the year Robbie Brown was on a mission. One by one, in the early morning darkness, my 8th graders and I boarded the bus. When Robbie Brown got on, he was holding a 4-inch pot with a white hyacinth. The delicate flowers were in full bloom. There was a small American flag stuck in the soil. Everyone asked Robbie what the flower was for, and all he'd say was that he was on a mission. Robbie became the talk of the bus. What mission was he on? Some of the girls in the back of the bus started spreading rumors. The hyacinth was really a present for Nancy Reagan, with whom Robbie was secretly in love. He'd give it to her when we toured the White House. Or maybe it was a present for our tour guide, the pretty young woman in the front seat. After a long ride, our bus finally arrived in Washington. We stopped at the White House, got off the bus, and went on the tour. The girls watched Robbie closely, but when we got back on the bus, Robbie was still carrying the flower. We drove down Pennsylvania Avenue to the Capitol. Robbie carried the hyacinth with him on the Capitol tour. No one let Robbie get out of sight. What was his mission? Around noon, we went to lunch. Robbie put the hyacinth down just long enough to eat a burger and fries. Next, we drove past the Washington Monument and around the tidal basin where the famous cherry trees were in bloom. Everyone watched Robbie like a hawk at Arlington National Cemetery. He walked past JFK's grave, then down the stairs to Bobby Kennedy's grave. At the pool there, he put the plant down, cupped his hands, and scooped some water into the pot. Robbie left Arlington just the way he'd entered it, plant in hand. Finally, the bus drove back to Washington and let everyone off at the Lincoln Memorial. A sense of urgency filled Robbie's steps. Everyone followed as he headed down to the wall of the Vietnam War Memorial. He scanned the many names and then put the hyacinths down under one particular name. Robbie turned to find his classmates watching with fascination. "So what's the story?" one finally asked. "My mother's sister is named Katie," Robbie began slowly. "She fell in love with Chip. Chip would always send Katie white hyacinths for Easter. He'd get the bulbs from Holland and grow them himself in his garden. When they bloomed, he'd dig them up, put them in a pot, and give them to her." In 1965, Chip was drafted. Robbie went on. The next year, he went to Vietnam and never came back. 20 years later, Aunt Katie still talks about Chip. This flower is from her to him. She asked me to leave it here. We all walked back and boarded the bus. Nobody kidded Robbie about the flowers anymore. For a long time, even the girls in the back were strangely silent. Many years have passed since then, and all those eighth graders are now adults. They've probably all forgotten that the Washington Monument is 555 feet tall and that Abraham Lincoln was assassinated at Ford's Theater. But I'm sure they all remember a soldier named Chip, a white hyacinth, and Robbie's mission. That's called Robbie's Mission, written by George M. Flynn, one of the many stories that make up Chicken Soup for the Gardener's Soul. And that's the Green Thumb Show for this week. For Sun's House Radio, I'm Lee Murray, your reader. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week. Be safe and healthy. And we'll be talking with you soon.